Then the combined pill is ethanol estradiol, which is again a synthetic estrogen, and again the synthetic progestin. And it's so important to get these words right, you know, because by muddling up the words of the natural progesterone, O-N-E, and the progestin ending in I-N, they are different things. One is, you know, a drug, and the other is a copy of your own hormone. And women don't understand that, and I didn't understand that. And that's what we should be going in and focusing on, making this safer.
Kate Muir is a brilliant documentary maker, investigative journalist, and women's health expert. Her work arms us with the knowledge we need to make our own educated decisions. This is the Lizelle Wellbeing Show, the podcast helping us all have a better second half. I'm Lizelle, and I'm on a bit of a mission to find ways for all of us to thrive in later life by investing in our health and our well-being today. Now, were you on hormonal contraception at any point during your life? Is it something you're navigating with the young people in your family? When I was first married, and we're talking around 40 years ago here, the contraceptive pill was pretty much the only method of contraception offered. It was ubiquitous, taken without a thought, let alone a discussion. In fact, I was prescribed it from the age of 14 for heavy periods, something I wouldn't necessarily advocate now for my own daughters. Well as making documentaries, Kate Muir has written two books, Everything You Need to Know About Menopause and Everything You Need to Know About the Pill, which is out on the 11th of April. She's also helped Louise Newson set up the Menopause Charity, of which I'm very proud to have been the first official ambassador. Kate writes in her latest book that, like me, she had, quote, no idea until she started researching what the synthetic hormones in the contraceptive pill and other hormonal contraception could do to our moods, our sex drive, our vaginal microbiome, our brain structure, our future health, our instinctive attraction, and even our sense of smell. Quite a list. Well, we might not have been so lucky as to have known all this when we started on our own contraceptive journeys, but we can now have these conversations with our daughters and our granddaughters. And as we'll chat about this, this greater knowledge of hormones can support our own menopausal journeys too.
Well, welcome, Kate, and I am.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm so delighted that you are here because you produced not only two award-winning documentaries about the menopause for Channel 4, fronted by our mutual friend, Davina McCall, and we'll come back to menopause a bit later on. But you are such a campaigner. You know, I follow you on Instagram. I connect with you at various, you know, charity events. I'm a mega fan. And can we actually start off by my asking you what made you want to investigate the pill and hormonal contraception, you know, having followed on from the menopause, because it's kind of, you know, cart before the horse in a way, isn't it?
It is. And what happened to me was really rather a personal story. Was, of course, I was seeing the world through menopause glasses. I was talking about the safest kinds of body identical HRT, older women's hormones. And in my own house, my daughter Molly was dealing with lockdown and she'd been sent back from university and she got incredibly depressed. and really didn't want to come upstairs and have dinner with us, and said, I feel I'm, you know, darkening the room when I come in. And I was really worried about her, and I got her some help with an art therapist online. And then her prescription of pills ran out. It was Regividon, one of the old pills, and it ran out because it was, the prescription was in Edinburgh at a university. And about a month later, she bounced into the kitchen and she was twice the person she'd been. She was absolutely back to normal. Her depression had gone. Lockdown still continued. Everything still continued. But the hormones had just been dragging her down, the synthetic hormones and the pill. Gosh. And she and I started investigating what was going on together. And she showed me what was going on TikTok about young women complaining about the pill and saying it was dangerous. And I started looking at the hormones and the pill and I was horrified. So that's how it began.
How amazing. You know, I do find the best stories, like often the best brands, come from that authenticity, from that personal involvement, when you really get captured by something and you become evangelical about it, because you've got to investigate it, you've got to explore it, you've got to create it, and then of course share it. And presumably with your investigations, I mean, I know you uncovered so much, and we will get into the nitty-gritty of kind of the medical makeup of the pill. But, you know, let's not skip over the social leaps that have been made as a result of the pill. You know, you use a beautiful phrase in your book. You say those tiny pills were the ball bearings that rolled in the feminist movement, you know, which is kind of, I think, what we all think about it. We all think about the pill as being very liberating, don't we? And I guess that was its historical background.
Yeah, I mean, that's why we're in education, that's why we're in jobs, that's why we don't have to stop halfway through our careers and, you know, go and have a baby. It is fantastic, but it's 60 years old. And, you know, we've got Teslas now and, you know, the pill is a clapped out banger. And we should not be using what's in it anymore. Really? There is much better stuff around and there is much better male contraception. And we just need a will and a way to change the narrative and not give women the cheapest pills. So I think that's really, really, you know, important, that it will continue to liberate us and let us make decisions about when and where we want to have children. And that's become even more complicated in America with the, you know, anti-abortion movement. So it's incredibly important that we give ourselves this freedom, but that we stay in good health. And I know you are, as I am, very interested in what synthetic progestins do in the body. Yes. And it is the synthetic progestins that are in the pill that are not copies of your own hormone. And again, it was the synthetic progestins in our HRT long ago that were far riskier in terms of breast cancer. And when you think we older women are getting this fantastic chance to have body identical, safer HRT, why not our daughters? Why not Molly? You know?
Okay, so let's look at that then. So what is in the current pill? And, you know, obviously I'm postmenopausal, doesn't apply to me, but I have two daughters, you know, like you, I have young women in my household. I have a 32-year-old and a 22-year-old. So if they're on the pill, what are they ingesting and what could they be ingesting as a safer alternative? And I guess the question is, why aren't they?
Yeah. So I always thought the pill, right, was, you know, estrogen and progesterone, just somehow a copy of our own hormones. It is not. So it contains a synthetic progestin, which when you look at it under the microscope, you know, is a different shape from our own progesterone, and it can hook onto different receptors in the brain and in the body. So this synthetic progestin, which is obviously the contents of the mini pill and part of the combined pill, can hook onto testosterone receptors, progesterone receptors, and estrogen receptors in the brain. So no wonder it causes some quite strange, if small, changes in almost every woman. And then the combined pill is ethanol estradiol, which is again a synthetic estrogen, and again the synthetic progestin. And it's so important to get these words right, you know, because by muddling up the words of the natural progesterone, O-N-E, and the progestin ending in I-N, they are different things. One is, you know, a drug, and the other is a copy of your own hormone. And women don't understand that, and I didn't understand that. And a lot of academics studying this area don't seem to make that clear. And that's what we should be going in and focusing on, making this safer.
So is there no body identical contraceptive pill available for younger women?
Ah, well, there's a half body identical one available now. There's actually three. They're called Zoelle, Drovelis and Clara. And they're all on the big NHS national formulary, but they are very, very hard to get. And what is in them is a natural estrogen, similar to our own estrogen, but they still have the synthetic progestin in them. But a lot of them have a better grade of synthetic progestin. And like the Zoelle pill has something called Nomac in it as its progestin and a natural estrogen. And they've tested that on women with, you know, PMS and PMDD. And it seems to work much better for their mood, having their natural hormone back at a steady level, as opposed to a synthetic hormone.
So we know that natural progesterone is available. I take it myself. I'm on Utrogestan as part of my HRT. That's micronized body identical progesterone. So it is available for pharmaceutical companies to use, but they're not using it in the contraceptive pill. Is that because it's more expensive, or is it too difficult, or they're just not bothered, or they're not aware? I mean, why?
I interviewed one of the scientists at Theramex, which are a great sort of pro-women pharmaceutical company, and they said this could happen in the future, but we haven't got it now. And the synthetic progestins are very effective at protecting the womb lining and that kind of thing. So it is, you know... But they say it is possible. But is anyone spending money on the scientists? You know, no, because, you know, big pharma's already got a product they can sell. And you should know that the ordinary pill like Regivodon or Microgynon, which I was on, is an old fashioned kind of extracted from testosterone, actually, and it's quite androgenic. And that old pill costs about £1.50 a month. And the new pills I was talking about, which are available and people can buy them privately, probably costs about £8 a month. Right. You know, if that works better for you, God, it's worth it in terms of lattes, isn't it?
I mean, seriously, also that the mental health cost. I mean, you know, if you're looking at the cost per patient for the NHS, if you've got a young woman who spirals down into depression and then needs care or can't work, you know, can't be part of the economy because of mental health. You mentioned earlier, interestingly, the words male contraception. You know, when I think of male contraception, I just think of condoms. I mean, are you talking about something else here?
Well, I went to Manchester to interview a couple who were in the tests for the male contraceptive gel, which is a very good synthetic progestin, a really fancy one, and testosterone. And basically, after a few months, it lowers your sperm count to almost zero from millions. And I interviewed a couple who were testing it, and she'd had a miserable time on the coil, on the pill. And he'd said, right, I'm taking responsibility. We're going into this trial together. And they did it for a year. He felt pretty good on it because it's got plenty of testosterone fed back into your body.
Excellent.
And their relationship changed because she felt he was sharing the burden and going for the hospital appointments and, you know, making sure he did something every morning.
Yes.
And then they came off it and they had a baby, proving that this was a very effective contraceptive that also affected you not in the long run. And that will probably be available. It's called NES/T, and that's been tested at Edinburgh and all around the world. And that will probably be available in 5 years' time, but nobody is rushing. And then there is also there's something called Vasal Gel, which is a temporary vasectomy. Right. So they inject your vas deferens with a little bit of gel, which hardens. I'm thinking like super glue, but who knows? Right. But it provides a little kind of sieve in the tube, and it doesn't let the sperm through.
Really?
And then 2 years later, when you think, oh, I want to have a baby, you can inject, that, you know, a professional can inject something is actually a sort of solution of bicarbonate of soda that melts the gel, makes it go away, and then a couple of weeks later, you are fertile again. And I think many, many men want the choice of making that decision themselves.
Sure, they don't want to get caught in. I mean, it's not just women who don't want to get pregnant, but a lot of men do not want to become fathers, you know, and you know, sometimes I've heard cases of men who kind of get trapped and get caught by women who say, no, it's fine, darling, you know, I'm on the pill. Yeah. And then suddenly they get launched into fatherdom, you know, without wanting it. So I guess it depends on the relationship, and it depends who's involved, and how trusting you are, and you know, whether, you know, I guess for that couple who were trialing this gel, you know, they were together and they ended up having a baby at the end, you know, because they stopped the trial. So it wouldn't have been the end of the world had that happened earlier. So I guess it's horses for courses, isn't it?
Yeah. But I think the main thing that's come out for me writing this book has been the mental health aspects of the pill. And also, you know, we know, you and I, Liz, that the mental health aspects of the menopause, we were gaslighted about them for years and years.
Yes.
And I remember doing that survey, which we did for the second Davina McCall menopause program, 4,000 women, and 73% said they had brain fog or memory loss. God. And, you know, a huge number said they had depression and anxiety.
Yeah.
And I just suddenly thought, oh God, menopause is about mental health. It's not, it's about hot flushes a bit, because that's what we can see, but menopause is about mental health. And it was with these thoughts in my mind that I went into the pill and thought, well, what is the mental health situation? And I kind of looked up everything on the Faculty of Sexual Health and Reproduction website. I got all the kind of textbooks in, and there weren't very many, and read them. And really, mental health is confined to a small corner called mood swings. And that sort of implies they'll go up or down, doesn't it?
That is also actually quite a pejorative statement, don't you think? You know, we're not talking about depression, anxiety. You know, for girls, it's a bit moody. You've got a mood swing, love. You know, you'll swing back the other way is kind of what it implies.
Yeah. And so one of the things is I went through all their science, because I like digging through science, and I went through all the papers they cited. And they, on the whole, of course, people cite randomized controlled trials where you have, you know, two cohorts, one on the pill, one off the pill, very similar bunch of people, and you're testing their mental health very carefully. But of course, that's not what happens in real life. And it's very, very hard to, you know, compare people taking a placebo pill or something. I mean, they'd have to use a condom. It's bonkers. And what was really interesting was not looking at the randomized controlled trials, the little trials that are cited in all the literature, but looking at the big population studies in Scandinavia. Because in Scandinavia, they are taking the records of 1 million women in Denmark, 1 million women in Sweden. And in fact, they're even looking at our own UK biobank and looking at the big studies there. And they have money, and they have studied what happens to women's mental health with the pill, and also with the coil as well. And it is very, very, and actually the other forms of contraception like Depo-Provera and the injection have even worse mental health outcomes. But what we see is, you know, obviously a tiny number of people get depressed on the pill, but literally it goes up by a third. You know, I mean, it really does increase when they're on the pill. And the other thing that happens is for younger women, really the risks are much, much higher. And there was one study which showed adolescents were much, much more likely, you know, it was increasing the suicide rate when women went on the pill, when young women. And you think, oh, yeah, well, that's a big, you know, study. And the randomized control trials obviously took people off the pill who were, you know, didn't count people who were already prone to depression or anxiety or were schizophrenic or whatever, you know, whatever thing they had on these kind of lists of symptoms long ago. And if you look at these big observational trials, they are of real-time data of real people going on the pill, and you can see whether or not they go on to antidepressants afterwards. And that, for me, even if it's not what the medical establishment is saying, it exists in the real world.
That's what's actually happening.
And it's really important. And also, one of the very smart young female scientists in Sweden, you know, was, you know, you're thinking maybe people who go on the pill have more problems, or, you know, is it connected? Is it, you know, causative. And she found that we had 7,000 sisters in the UK biobank. And she looked at what happened to sisters who were on the pill and off the pill and compared them. And obviously that's a very similar family background. It's similar genetics.
Yeah.
And she found that the ones who were on the pill or other hormonal contraception were more likely to get depression. And for me, the most important thing I think about this whole thing is that women go on the pill at school. That's when they make the decision. 64% go on the pill at school.
But 64% of girls at school are on the pill.
Well, not 64% of girls. That's when, of all the women who go on the pill, 64% first start it when they're at school. So you are making this decision when you are 14 to put synthetic hormones in your body and you just don't understand them. And quite often neither does your doctor.
No. Well, you know, I was actually put on the pill at 14 for heavy periods.
Exactly.
So, you know, and there was no discussion. I mean, obviously, you know, we didn't talk about risks or, you know, informed consent or any of that, you know, back then. It was just, well, this is going to help you, you know, take this and go away. And, you know, looking back, I think, you know, did that affect my mental health? And of course, I guess when young women, you know, they are prescribed the pill from their GP, and if they go back with symptoms of depression, they're just simply likely to be given an antidepressant and an SSRI. And I guess GPs are not connecting the link. I mean, how many GPs know about this? And if a young woman presents with depression, how many of them will say, let's look at your medical records. Oh, you're on the pill. I think you should come off it first.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know whether, you know, what happens in that situation at all. I'm not sure. But it's not part of the conversation. And it really, really needs to be. But it is part of young women's conversation. And what I was talking about earlier about Molly finding all this stuff on TikTok. And there is that moment on TikTok where you see lots of young women unfurling the side effects leaflet on the pill and maybe wearing it as a cape
because
it's so big or whatever, and then they will sit, and there's lots of young women who've come off the pill and they'll basically be going, it's all rainbows, it's fantastic, I feel just a whole new person creatively and sexually. But I think we also need to remember how brilliant the pill is, and that's one of the things I'm trying to straddle in the book.
Well, exactly, bring it up to date,
which is to say, you know, if you've got polycystic, you know, ovarian syndrome, if you've got endometriosis, it's not going to cure it, but it might really help you get through your day and steady your hormones. And if you have, you know, 10-day periods, you don't want to have that. And, you know, there's all that. But there's also the other thing, periods, right? The Pope rule around periods.
Okay, so let's talk about this, because I only recently discovered that actually if you're on the pill, it's completely fine to take it every single day. We do not need to have that 5 to 7 day break as a monthly bleed. And that was to do with the Pope. Is that correct?
Yeah. Well, the guy, I've got a chapter on history in the book. And there's this guy called John Rock, who is a Dr. John Rock. He's a Catholic doctor. And he wants the Pope to approve of the pill as part of the natural rhythm method, where you naturally don't have, you know, a baby if you abstain. And he absolutely tried to do a thing where they had 20 days off and 5 days on having periods on the original pill. And they also kept the bleed in because at first women were terrified and they didn't understand what was happening and they thought the bleed was a real period. And as we know now, it's a fake bleed and it only happens because the hormones have gone away. And if the hormones just stay steady, you know, it doesn't build up and you don't explode.
No.
and the other thing, which I've absolutely key, is that it's much, much better to take 4 days off every 3 months than actually take this 7 day period, because the 7 days makes you feel terrible. And there's that mental health drop of hormones, which you don't need to go through. And the 4 day, or if you take a shorter bleed, you're much less likely to start ovulating again. And, you know, if you're taking the pill on day 7 and you might ovulate on day 8 and you get muddled about what day it is, you know, you've got a chance of getting pregnant. Whereas if you've got a 4 day break, You don't, because, you know, there's not really any chance of ovulation starting. So we've been sold an absolute pup on this. And 69% of women, according to our big 4,000 people survey, are taking a break, and half of them think they have to. So there's all this Tampax and all this suffering.
You know, yeah, I was just about to say, presumably, if the majority of younger women are using the pill as their form of contraception, the sanitary product manufacturers, you know, tampons, sanitary towels, all the rest of it, pads, they're going to be horrified with the news that actually we don't need to have periods, because they're going to see, you know, maybe a two-third drop in their sale, in their market share.
Well, exactly. And also with the coil, lots of women don't get periods. And I actually came across a really interesting thing about the coil, because, you know, there's the Myrina coil, which lots of us use for HRT. And then there are the couple of smaller coils, and they're called the Kylena and the Jadess. And they also are easier to fit because that wee bit smaller for women who haven't had children. But the brilliant thing is, in terms of mental health, the smaller the coil, the less it's releasing, the better the mental health outcome, because you're not getting so much of that hormone. So actually, women on the little coils do much better than women on the Myrina. And you have to change them every 3 years instead of five, but or eight. But okay. it does make a difference, I think.
And so they're still effective. They're still going to be a good form of contraception.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and why aren't we telling them that? And why aren't we telling our young women and our daughters, look, go and get the small coil that might help you, you know?
So what did, let's to finish off this conversation before we take a break and move on to menopause, ultimately then, what did Molly end up doing, if you and her are willing to share that? I mean, because I'm thinking as a mother here, you know, what do I tell my young daughters as the best option for them?
Molly got the Kylena coil and talks about it in her book. And actually, when she went back to Edinburgh, all the girls in her flat, all four of them, changed from the pill to the coil. There was just this kind of mysterious movement that caused lots and lots of people to come off the pill, and they went on the copper coil or the Kylena small coil. And Molly has been happy, much happier on that. And it's the same progestin, but it's a tiny amount. It's levonorgestrel, and it's the same amount that was in, it's the same progestin that was in her pill, but there's a tiny amount in the coil, and it doesn't affect her mentally. And it's turned out to be great. So, you know, there are solutions until we get, obviously, our male contraceptive gel.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally fascinating, Kate. Let's pause here. We'll come back in a moment to talk about how all this knowledge actually begins to be relevant and helpful during menopause as well.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Now, Kate, you say in the book that women who use progestin-only contraception, like implants, for example, are essentially given a chemical menopause, and that sounds quite stark. What do you mean by that?
Well, I was talking to Dr. Louise Newson about this, who, of course, is the great menopause guru and, you know, runs the biggest menopause clinic in the world. And she'd been treating some teenagers too. And one of the things that happens, of course, is when you're on the pill, certainly the most of the pills stop ovulation, so you're not getting that peak of estrogen anymore in the middle of the month. And even if you're on the estrogen only pill, you've got that very, very steady low level of synthetic estrogen. And of course, a lot of people find that they get dry vulvas and dry vaginas, exactly the same symptoms as women get in menopause, because there's not enough estrogen for the collagen in the vulva. And it has some of the same mental health sort of slightly flattening effects. There's a real loss of joy for some people. This is not everyone, but there is this, you know, people are not getting the hormones at the level they naturally would. And for instance, on the coil, people tend to, after a while on the coil, start ovulating again. So their hormones come back and they feel happy while being protected. Whereas with the pill, you can be sort of held down. And the other thing it does is it increases your sex hormone binding globulin, if we may say that, yes. And lowers your testosterone, which we know is a female hormone. And of course, about a fifth of women say that the pill lowers their libido.
That's an own goal, isn't it? I mean, the reason you're taking the pill is because you're having sex, but you don't want to get pregnant, but you just want to enjoy sex. But then the pill actually lowers your sex drive. So that's a bit of a downer.
Yeah, and it's very, very hard for people. But we do see this. The thing is, there's been so much supposition around this, but now the science is coming in and we're seeing really interesting, you know, looking into exactly what's happening to our testosterone levels. Also, brilliant neuroscience on the serotonin receptors in the brain and the effect of the pill on the serotonin receptors. And we can actually see in a picture that it's about 10% lower our levels of joy while we're on the pill. And, you know, sex is not just one thing or the other, is it? It's joy. It's that ovulation peak. It's testosterone and it's the whole,
yeah,
you know,
the connection and I mean everything, you know.
It's, yeah. So yeah. I think question, but we need such good information. I kept looking for studies on things and they weren't there. Just like they weren't there on the menopause. And I'm thinking, where is the science? Why is no one studying testosterone in young women and older women? Because this is really, really fascinating. Yeah. You know?
Well, I mean, testosterone has been such a big flag that's being waved, you know, by the menopause community, because, you know, up until fairly recently, it was thought of as simply a male hormone. But we know that we produce more testosterone in our ovaries than we do estrogen. And that actually it's not just linked to libido and sex drive, it's linked to mental health and brain cognition and memory function and muscle strength and muscle mass and all of those things. You know, as somebody who's an investigative journalist and a campaigner, are you seeing a shift in getting more awareness on testosterone and kind of having that more widely accepted?
I think among quite a narrow group of women in the menopause women movement and doctors, we are seeing that. I think the rest of society, and indeed, you know, if you look in the Encyclopedia Britannica or, you know, all sorts of places online, you are not seeing testosterone being a female hormone. And until people understand that testosterone is a female hormone and a massive female hormone, and our brains are filled with testosterone receptors, never mind our vulvas as well, that will really matter. And it is a great piece of gender bias in medicine, but it's also a piece of great hope for us all, because I think, you know, we can have this hormone back if it's low. We can use it, you know, to give ourselves more oomph in our lives. And I'm looking around me at these great menopause campaigners and women's health campaigners and politicians. And we are all on, you know, body identical HRT.
Yes,
Many of us are on testosterone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we're out there fighting every morning kind of for women's health. And I think in many ways it is, you know, it is fantastic to be given this gift that you do have your hormones functioning at a really high level in your 50s and 60s and probably 70s and 80s.
Hopefully.
And I'm, you know, it's really good news that you can bring to people. And that's what makes doing this worth it, really. You know?
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. Coming back to taking the pill in earlier life and, you know, kind of linking that almost to this kind of created mini menopause, if you like. You link it also in your book to a reduction in bone density. I mean, that's something that I'm particularly passionate about talking about. Are we saying that if we've been on hormonal contraception at some point over our lifetime, that we're more at risk of that?
I don't think there's many studies on the pill. The real bad one for bone density, and the Royal Osteoporosis Society say this, is the Depo-Provera injection, which does seem to reduce bone density quite quickly. And I mean, who knows, have people studied people who've been on the pill for 20 years and looked at their bone density 20 years ago and now? I mean, I bet you they haven't.
No, of course not.
You know, it's not been something anyone cared about. And, you know, what I love about HRT is there's that lovely study which shows that your bone density, once you're on HRT, goes up by 3% over 2 years and keeps going up. And when you have that loss in menopause of bone density, it's hello, you know, that there's help, you know, and you don't need to take those nasty kind of osteoporosis drugs, which are dangerous.
Bisphosphonates, which stop working after a while and even produce negative outcomes.
It makes me absolutely livid that we're heading towards a Zimmer frame and we don't need to, you know, we really don't need to. And I think it's criminal that we're not informing women of this and that the NHS is not making this a key part of its strategy against osteoporosis.
Absolutely. And in fact, you know, while we're on the subject, why is the Royal Osteoporosis Society, which you've mentioned, which I'm also an ambassador for, not talking more about HRT for bone elasticity? I mean, when you talk to them about the injection, you know, did they have anything to say about why they're not sort of more vocal about HRT generally for bones?
I didn't ask them about that. But then I would say that, you know, many, many charities are financed by lots of different pharmaceutical companies, and that's where they get some of their money. And obviously some of their money will come from the people selling the other osteoporosis cures.
Right.
Not much money will come from the HRT manufacturers,
because
the big pharma makes almost no money out of HRT because it's a product of nature and they can't patent it. So it's cheap as chips. You know, it costs about the NHS about £8 a month to give us our HRT back. And, you know, these osteoporosis drugs can cost up to £9,000 a year.
Wow.
So we want to look at the capitalist market there as well and who's financing what. And, you know, I do think, I've been thinking about this a lot recently as sort of menopause product aisles have appeared in Tesco and things like that.
Please.
There is a clear thing going on here where people are saying, oh, women should have the choice of HRT or not HRT. And actually, no, they need to have the information about HRT before they make that choice.
Yes.
And they're not getting real information.
Yeah.
And the word choice is often a form of scaremongering. And I think the longer we keep women frightened of HRT and scared of menopause, the more people will sell weird supplements that say meno this and meno that for, you know, £50-60 a bottle. And the more that, you know, people will make money from osteoporosis drugs. And as women, we can see through that and we need to call it out.
We should be able to,
Yeah.
I mean, one of the kind of the double whammies is that as you lose your hormones and they start to decline in their 40s, it could even be early, especially for some ethnicities, you lose a lot of that mental capacity to think straight. So you become even more vulnerable and even more paranoid, perhaps certainly in later years, that the HRT is going to damage you somehow. So the narrative almost has to be over strong to actually get over that fear that's going to be there in women because they are losing their hormones.
Yeah, but I would say women are not stupid. And since we all, including you, Liz, sort of started this big menopause movement over the last 4 years, 1 million more women have gone on HRT in the UK of the 13 million menopausal women. And you think that is 1 million lives.
Yes.
You know, what,
and families
1 million,
affected, well, and jobs and all the rest of it.
Yeah. I mean, it's a massive change.
And
that came from women up.
Yes,
and when one woman knows, they tell the next person and the next person at the bus stop, you know, that's how we work. And we have conversations.
So we've got 12 more million women to get at, is what you're saying. All right, everybody listening to this, go out and tell 12 friends if you're, you know, one of the 1 million lucky ones.
Yeah, but I just think it's so important that, you know, the whole pills story was absolutely about stopping people getting pregnant. We're so focused on fertility, and that was fantastic and liberated us. But the whole menopause story was also about being not fertile anymore. So what was the point in looking after you? And literally, we were in that male patriarchal framework at either end of our lives. And we're very angry about it.
We certainly are. I mean, you make an interesting point in your book about how being on the pill into your 40s might mean that some women don't actually realise they're perimenopausal because they're missing those early symptoms, and then they might miss the opportunity to start taking HRT earlier on. And we do know that the sooner you start HRT, the better, the more effective it is and the more health protective. Is there any remedy for that, or is it something that we just need to be more aware of?
I wonder, I was thinking about all this, I was thinking maybe people should take more pill holidays.
Right.
I think every so often maybe they should take a couple of months off and see, do I have a period? What is my natural cycle doing now? I've been on the pill for 10 years. Do we mind using a condom for a couple of months? You know, whatever it is. And I just think, and I talk to so many people, I mean, literally Instagram messages pouring in of women who sort of say, oh, I went on the pill and I've been on it for 20 years. I came off it. I realized I was infertile. And, you know, that there are times maybe in their 30s where they could have topped up their hormones and perhaps, you know, moved into fertility, and they didn't get that chance. And, you know, the increasing struggles of older, you know, older mothers trying to, you know, get pregnant is really upsetting. And I think there's something there that we also need to be thinking about. I'm not a fertility expert. I haven't investigated it, but I do think we need to look at that too.
Mm. Well, another method that's growing in popularity is the use of period tracking apps.
Mm-hmm.
I guess they can be helpful to track erratic or particularly heavy periods, like I know you had, you know, as a way to understand perhaps if you're in perimenopause.
Oh, yeah. No, they are very, very useful. And knowing when it comes, how many days, how heavy, mm-hmm. I think is incredibly important. But one of the things I've been doing with this book is asking women about their most embarrassing period, just so we can share it and feel better. I'll just do you mine, because I was a student at Glasgow University, and I was on the Student Representative Council, and I was at the Senate meeting with all the professors trying to represent the students. No idea what I was doing. And I'm sitting there and I'm wearing a white circular skirt and a black leather jacket. As I get up from the Senate meeting with all these professors, there's an enormous red circle the size of a saucer on the back of my skirt. And the professor next to me comes over and he goes, I think, dear, you've got a stain. And I am so humiliated. And I have to walk down the stairs with all these Senate people in gowns behind me. And I have to turn my white skirt round, hold my bag in front of the big red stain, and do the walk of shame down the grand stairs at the university. And, you know, we have all done this on a white sofa or whatever.
Yes.
And I just think, oh, God, I didn't need to have that period because I had it because of the Pope rule, and I was on the pill. You know, you just and it has stuck with me. I still blush, and I shouldn't blush because, you know, it's perfectly okay. But, you know, it can be so humiliating, so shaming, and we need to kind of get rid of that shame. And young women have been amazing about the period power movement. That's been fantastic.
Well, as we end here, where do people share their stories? I know that you're very vocal on Instagram. I follow you. Where's the best way for people to connect with all of this?
So I have two Instagrams. Very simply, Pill Scandal for your pill stories and Meno Scandal for your menopause stories. And I love the conversation there. And I learned so much from women telling me things and spotting things and alerting me to things. So please come and talk to me.
Excellent. Kate, it's always such a joy to talk to you. Thank you. And on behalf of the sisterhood, thank you for everything that you're doing for women of all ages. We absolutely applaud and salute you. And thank you for your time today.
Oh, thank you, Liz. You too.
Oh, Kate, what an eye-opening conversation. Thank you. I don't know about you, but I am most definitely going to be sharing the link to this episode with all my friends who have daughters, as well as my own daughters, and urging them to share it with their friends also. It really is so important that something so ubiquitous in modern female life should have its risks so little talked about and understood. And while on the subject of risks, of course, Kate was the brains and the brilliance behind Davina McCall's menopause documentaries on Channel 4, uncovering the scandalous lack of HRT help for midlife women. HRT, of course, being so health protective and carrying far fewer risks than the pill, and yet still so hard for some women to access. What are your thoughts on all this? Do share your stories or empathise with others who do. You can follow Kate's pages on Instagram at MenoScandal and at PillScandal. And while you're there, you can follow us too. We are at Lizelle Wellbeing, and I am personally on Instagram at LizelleMe. I would also love it if you wanted to share your experiences on the podcast. Do you have any further questions that you'd like me to explore on a future episode? Well, you can email us now, podcast@lizellewellbeing.com. Until then, go well. Goodbye. The Lizelle Wellbeing Show is presented by me, Lizelle, and is produced by Anushka Tate for Fresh Air Production, with additional production support from Ellie Smith.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.